This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. After 7 days in the Sky Bet Championship, in which Barnsley's best ever run of form in the top two divisions took them into the playoff places. 6 wins in 7 in Sky Bet League One mean an automatic promotion place is now just 2 points away from Sunderland. We'll hear from them later. And in Sky Bet League Two, Oldham Athletic parted company with Harry Kewell and made Keith Curl their 8th different manager since their current owner arrived in 2018. It's the official EFL podcast. I look ahead to the 2021 Papa John's Trophy final to come, but first, it is 4 years this week since Mark Robbins returned as manager of Coventry City. And what a 4 years it's been. A few months later, he won the EFL Trophy. A year after that, Coventry were promoted via the playoffs from Sky Bet League Two. And last summer, they won the Sky Bet League One title. This season and last, of course, they have been playing at St Andrews, but not for too much longer. They've announced this week they're set to return to the Ricoh Arena from August and have signed a contract with stadium owners, the Rugby Union Club Wasps, for the next 10 years. Let's talk to the Coventry City manager, Mark Robbins. And as much, Mark, as you've always said, look, I can't control factors like where the club plays, how much harder has it actually made the job and how does it affect the identity of the team?
Well, firstly, I think that there's got to be congratulations go to everybody behind the scenes. There's an awful lot of people been doing a lot of work to make this happen. Dave Boddy, our chief exec, and Stephen Vaughan, the chief exec at Wasps, have been getting their heads together for a long period of time. And a lot of other people, Andy Street, the mayor of the West Midlands as well, and a number of other people, our owner, Joy Seppala, and the owner, Mr. Richardson at Wasps. So, you know, there's a lot of work gone into that, I know that. So congratulations to everybody for getting the deal finalised and over the line. And it gives everybody a real boost going into the last 11 games of this season, whilst we've been playing and looked after really and really well at St Andrews by Birmingham City. We knew we always had to get back into Coventry, and that's achieved now, and gives us a lot to look forward to as well once the return of supporters is finalised. I think it's a big boost for everybody.
Do you know what I always love about hearing you talk is you impeccably walk the political lines, Mark, of because there's so many interests involved and keeping the fans on side when there's all this stuff going on off the field must have been a very delicate balancing act at times over the last 4 years.
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost, it's all about the supporters, because they're the ones who pay the money. They're the ones who travel to watch. They're the ones that have not been able to go, you know, notwithstanding the virus, they weren't able to go prior to it, that they couldn't go and meet their mates. They couldn't get down to the local pub and then get to the game in time. They had to travel across the city of Coventry into the city of Birmingham. And there's so many logistical issues as well as the political issues. And you know, the fact that it was just disappointing for everybody in a really, really tough league, in a tough environment, but also without supporters. You know, it's a credit to everybody up and down the country, in fairness, people, you know, the stakeholders, everybody involved in football, that the football has been to such a high standard with the circumstances that are around it. But, you know, I think for us at Coventry City, it's great news.
How do you connect the players to the city that bears, you know, to the club that bears the city's name, you know, because obviously you've made signings since you've been away from the Ricoh. Do you have to give them a little guided tour, encourage them to go drive around? What do you do to help, you know, create that bond?
Well, yeah, absolutely. But that's the timing of that is will be key. I don't think there's any need to do that just yet. But certainly once this season's over, we need to go down and have a look, because the players we signed last summer haven't played in the Ricoh for Coventry City. Some of them haven't been there at all. So that's really important to sort of, you know, get them used to that environment, because it will change. They're used to playing at St Andrews. And as I've said before, they've looked at us brilliantly, but the Ricoh is our home. The stadium was built for Coventry City Football Club. And like I say, everything that's gone in the past is gone. You know, this is a new start for everybody and one everybody should look forward to. And the fact that it seems more of a cooperation. I've already had a call from Stephen Vaughan today, just after the news broke, which was fantastic. I mean, it's brilliant. The lines of communication are open, and that is something that's not happened before. So credit to everybody. And yeah, this is a positive, really positive day, and one we can look forward from.
Yeah, the brave new dawn starts from the weekend of the 7th of August. Do you know what I do love, though, is just how Coventry City maintain those sort of heritage links through stuff like the shirts, because you're wearing one of your kits this season as kind of bears the legend of sort of City figures, doesn't it, Mark? And did somebody tell me Dion's managed to get his fizzog in the back of one of those? Am I right on this?
I would imagine. I've not seen Dion's. Yeah, but I think so. I think certainly Tommy Hutchinson's on there. Jimmy Hill's on there. And I wouldn't be surprised if Dion's on there. He is synonymous with Coventry City, is Dion. But I think there's the city skylines on one of the shirts. There's the European City of Culture as well. And, you know, there's the logos and on one of the shirts for that. And the link, obviously, is always there. And the fact that it's such a brilliant city, it's one that, you know, that the football club is just so well supported. And again, just look, forget what's gone. You know, you've got to look forward, and there's a lot to be excited about, a lot to look forward to, and the things we can really build on from this moment in time. And it's just really exciting. I think that the club, obviously, that, you know, when you're talking about how do you keep the link, the link's always there. We're training Coventry every day. We're still at Wrighton. That's been the one constant throughout all of this. And really, we've had a sabbatical away from the city of Coventry, and hopefully that's the end of that. And we can look forward to a really positive and bright future with some unbelievably loyal supporters.
You are as well, of course, one of the coolest clubs around. Anybody that can, you had a two-tone away kit, didn't you, to celebrate two-tone records last season? So anybody that sort of introduces that into football circles is all right by me. Were you a two-tone fan back in the day, Mark, or are you a little bit too young for that?
Bit too young. But having said that, the UB40 and you know, all those bands, and the Birmingham and Coventry bands were synonymous with that movement. And
Specials, Selector, yeah.
The specials were there at the shirt launch. It was absolutely outstanding. And again, Dave Buddy and Tynan Scope and all those people at the football club who've designed the shirts or helped design the shirts and put those ideas and together and come up with a shirt, because the shirts have been absolutely brilliant over the last few years. I don't think there's been any better shirts. I think they'll give every other Coventry City shirt a run for its money, and the supporters have really looked forward to, I think, the unveiling of the next one. But that shirt, the two-tone shirt, was a really special shirt. But yeah, all the shirts recently have been fantastic, and I think the players love them. We just recently won our blue one in the game at St Andrews against Brentford, and that went down really well with the supporters as well. So yeah, it's really exciting times. And yeah, for today's news has been a long time coming, but yeah, very grateful to hear it.
You must be immensely proud of your achievements on the field, aren't you, Mark, when you look at just how far you have stretched this football club despite all of that going on over the last 4 years.
I'm lucky. I've got a great set of staff. We're only small in number, but they're really talented people. And to have a chief exec like Dave Boddy and an owner like Joy Seppala, who's really supportive and has been all the way through, Tim Fisher, the chairman, who's had some really bad press over the period that he's been chairman, but you know, he's been nothing but supportive to me. I think everybody in the club is, you know, we missed each other really, because there's been a lot of staff been furloughed. People waiting, working from home, and only coming in when it's been necessary, and that's been few and far between, and you know, all the usual things that go with that. So mental health, and you know, all those bits and pieces, and life going on around, and clearly there's been a lot of death going on around as well, and people having to cope with that. It's been a real difficult time for everybody, not just at Coventry City, but you know, we are a small staff, close knit, pretty close, and we're all supportive of each other, I think, and that's been the biggest thing for me. You know, that unity with the staff and, you know, board level all the way through has been fantastic. So yeah, it's been a really good, strong 4 years, and like I say, this gives us a platform to do even more.
Have you surprised yourself just how far you have been able to stretch what you've had?
I think it was no secret last year that we had the mid-table budget, and it's been a tough time in terms of the finances to get sort of close to it. But again, recruitment, I mean, I didn't even mention the recruitment department, which is two people, and the scouts that come on, I see two people. There's probably about 8-9 total, but there's a head of recruitment and a recruitment analyst with Chris Badlin and Stuart Bentham, and then some real brilliant scouts who go out to games when they can, or whether they've been doing video analysis or whatever they've been doing during this pandemic. Everybody's pulled together, Clem, and it's just a big team effort. So there's no one person. There's no. It's certainly not all about me. I've said that right from day one. It doesn't matter. I think really trying to get things organised, to try and get a DNA, and that's there. You know, I think that's the biggest, you know, the pride from me is how the players perform, how they are on a daily basis, how they've embraced this challenge, this really difficult challenge. And I'm not talking about just the Championship. I'm talking about the challenge of coming into a building, being close to each other and making sure that they're doing the right things to avoid it ripping through the virus, ripping through the football club. The physiotherapist, the doctor's got a lot to be proud about too, because of the way they've set things up. I think you know, the whole thing we've taken really seriously, and you know, hopefully we can see the back of this virus and see supporters return, and we can really look forward to a bright future, Clem. I think it's fantastic news.
It is fantastic news. Just how challenging is it at this point keeping the players going? Bearing in mind there was always going to be a bit of fatigue in football, in so much as, well, obviously everybody had 3 months at home last year in the first sort of main lockdown, but nobody was going away and nobody going on holiday and all that kind of stuff. So physically and mentally, just how difficult is it to have had only a short break last season? And was it really at any point a period of relaxation, Mark? Because you'd sort of sat in limbo, is the league coming back, isn't it? Then you know, the gradual unlocking, could anybody go overseas and lie in the sun? That's obviously created a fatigue for the whole nation, and I guess that's reflected in your squad as well. Did anybody genuinely relax for a couple of weeks?
I would imagine that's a no, it was totally different than anywhere else and any other time in our lives, or in professional lives or otherwise. And yeah, that plays a part. That's a significant sort of, it's a significant question, really. And obviously mental health is a big, big thing. You know, certainly people raised awareness about that a couple of years ago, and, you know, that's gathering momentum, rightly so. And you have to put things in place, you know, processes in place, and, you know, to be able to access any help that they need, which we try and do for anybody. But, you know, people still have to be a little bit more open on that front. You know, we're trying to get there and trying to make it so as it's not a, there's no stigma attached to that. Everybody needs a bit of help from time to time. There's no shame in that. And we've tried to do that and help people. But that is something that will have come about. People living on their own, players that have moved down from wherever, other parts of the country and beyond, and staying on their own, being separate from the families, that all plays a part. And, you know, like I say, the getting back into training is a big thing, being having that sort of togetherness without having the ability to bond as you normally would do and go and do, you know, have shared experiences which create that bond. The players I'm lucky to have with us that have been, they've been absolutely fantastic in terms of everything, the physical, the mental, and all the preparation, and their commitment to Coventry City has been second to none. All we're missing is the supporters back. And like I say, that's something to really look forward to now.
Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship over the last 7 days, Mick McCarthy celebrated his 1,000th game in management by extending his unbeaten start with Cardiff City to 11 matches and signing a 2-year contract extension. Neil Warnock extended his stay with Middlesbrough to cover next season and celebrated with an epic, even by his previous standards, referees rant. And Rotherham United were forced to postpone 3 matches after a COVID outbreak. Your fixtures this coming weekend: Friday night match sees Brentford visit Blackburn. Early kickoff on Saturday, Swansea are at Luton. We got Bournemouth against Barnsley, Cardiff against Watford, Reading against Nottingham Forest, and Norwich travel to Sheffield Wednesday on Sunday. I've missed off the fact that Marks Coventry were the team that were due to go to Rotherham. And I guess, Mark, you know, the whole sort of COVID consciousness just has to continue, doesn't it? Just be seen through till everybody's jabbed and fingers crossed the country's out the other side. Just goes to show Rotherham getting it in the camp again, what can happen.
Absolutely, and but for the grace of God, go I. I think it's it obviously can rip through any point. Somebody gets it, and if you're in close proximity, and certainly more so indoors, then you've got a chance of it passing and spreading, because there's, you know, it up and down the country for 12 months has been, it's been horrific. But it's just, yeah, disappointment. But still, you just get over the disappointment quickly, and that's gone now, so we've put that to bed. That game will be played later on in April, and we'll just concentrate on Luton Town on Tuesday night. That's all we can do, and just we'll concentrate on us and give our best.
Congratulations on the return. Well, congratulations on what you've achieved at the club on the field, but congratulations on the return to the Rico. That really is a great piece of news. Great to talk to you, Mark.
Thanks very much, Clem.
This is the official EFL podcast.
On to Sky Bet League One then, where 40-year-old James Coppinger made his 600th appearance for Doncaster Rovers. Blackpool made it 4 league wins in an unbeaten last 6 to continue their rise up the table, and Wigan Athletic's administrators are in advanced talks with a consortium led by a Bahrain businessman. Your fixtures this coming weekend: actually, Blackpool play Fleetwood in a local derby. It's Bristol Rovers against Wimbledon, with all things at stake at the bottom of the table. Burton hope to continue their recent revival at Crewe. Doncaster in 5th at the moment entertain Northampton. Hull are back to top and entertain Oxford. And it's 3rd placed Lincoln against bottom placed Rochdale. In Sky Bet League 2, it's now 8 wins in an unbeaten last 10 for resurgent Bolton Wanderers. Newport County's atrocious shared pitch at Rodney Parade means they've had to switch 2 home games to the Cardiff City Stadium. They beat Bradford City in the first of those, only their second defeat of the Mark Truman and Connor Sellers era. Your fixtures in Sky Bet League 2: Friday night, Barrow struggling at the bottom visit Walsall, and then on Saturday you've got Exeter against Cheltenham. Forest Green Rovers are at home to Harrogate. Morecambe against Newport is 5th v 6th. Cambridge visit Oldham. Bolton visit Port Vale, and Grimsby take on Colchester at 5:30. This coming weekend, eyes are also focused on Wembley Stadium, which will host a double header of the Papa John's Trophy Finals. On Saturday, it's the delayed due to COVID 2020 final between Portsmouth, the current holders, and Salford City. And on Sunday, the climax of this year's competition sees Sunderland and Tranmere Rovers going head to head, which should have meant that current goal scoring king of Prenton Park, James Vaughan, was up against one of his former teams. But, mate, knee operation, and you've got it coming up the day after we're recording this. I'm gutted for you. I mean, first of all, when you're going in to have an operation, are you as nervous as the general public would be, or are footballers used to being fiddled and prodded about with medically and things?
To be honest, I'd had a lot of operations in my early days of playing, but it's been about 7 or 8 years since I've had one. So back then I wasn't very nervous, but now, funnily enough, I'm a bit more nervous than I was previously.
Oh, yeah. You're sitting and it's churning over and you're thinking, oh, blimey, what time am I going in and how are they going to knock me out and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and plus I'm not really sure of the surgery I'm going to have yet, so I won't know until I wake up how I've been treated. So a bit apprehensive about that as well, but hopefully it'll all go to plan.
When it's your bricks and mortar as well, i.e. your great asset, your ability to run and shoot and all the rest of it that you do. Do you feel a bit apprehensive as well as to what the outcome could be, that you just want to know you're in safe hands with a surgeon and that he's going to get you right again to go back out and do what you love doing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I say, when I was younger, you know, younger bodies heal a lot better than older ones. So getting on a bit now, I'm not sure how that'll recover. But like I say, I'm just hopeful it all goes to plan and I'm sure I'm in good hands.
What about the sort of psychological barrier of, let's be honest, this big event looming and unfortunately not being able to take part of it? Have you had to give yourself a good talking to, or as your missus, or have you got sort of mentors, mates, Hilly the manager? Have you got people you can lean on to chat that one through?
Yeah, everyone's been really good. I mean, for me, the biggest blow is not being able to help the team in the league. The Papa John's is great to play in and, you know, get to the final, but our bread and butter is the league. So, you know, as we were speaking about before, it's very tight at the top and I'm just disappointed I can't help out.
Yeah, but by the same token, I suppose, and you obviously, ironically, were part of a Portsmouth squad that won it 2 years ago. I mean, no player's going to turn down a Wembley appearance, James, I guess, are they, for all your real bread and butter is in the league?
Oh, no, definitely. It's an honour to play at Wembley. I've been fortunate to do it before. And, you know, like you say, I was at Portsmouth, but I didn't really play much and I didn't play in that final. So it would have been a great opportunity for me to put that right this weekend, but it wasn't to be. So just have to move on and, you know, I'll be there supporting the lads, hopefully, and I'm sure we'll enjoy the occasion, hopefully get the win.
Ah, so you are potentially going to travel with the squad. They're going to keep you involved, operation permitting, make sure you can move again and stuff, or are you going to be watching it from home?
No, definitely, depending on what surgery I get, but if there's a possibility of me travelling, I'll be going with the boys and, you know, being a part of the team, supporting them as much as I can, like I say.
How, over the years, have you dealt with the sort of highs and lows that football can bring?
I think it can be really tough. I think, you know, it's one of them where you're scrutinising in front of the public every single day and every performance. So, you know, the lows can be quite tough to deal with, but I just think you just have to have good people around you, lean on them when you need to, and hopefully you get through it.
Yeah, I mean, so who would you lean on? Who would you have turned to through some of the more challenging moments of your career?
You know, I've had really good people around me. My family have been massive. You know, my wife, kids I've got now, so they changed perspective on it. And mum and dad have always been brilliant. So I think I've been lucky in that sense. And I've got a lot of good friends within football and out of football. So I've got a good support network that I've definitely had to use over the years.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm asking these questions because when we look at the sort of trajectory of your career from still the Premier League's youngest ever goal scorer, I'm sure you don't do an interview without that coming up, through the sort of divisions and moves about, it does show one hell of a lot of resilience. And that's an important message to pass on to those that are struggling as we come to the end of this awful, awful period of a year all locked up. Those values are really important.
Definitely. I think, you know, we've seen all of us with, like you say, with COVID going on, that you just have to keep plodding on and, you know, good times will come back and just be strong and keep being positive.
I mean, have you surprised yourself over the years? Have there been moments when you've been on a real high and maybe things have suddenly nosedived a bit? But similarly, when I look at your sort of career path, where, you know, you look as though you've got, and then suddenly you have that springboard again and you're up and off in the other direction. Does it bring that level of surprises?
Not really. I think I'm quite level-headed and honest with myself, the way I'm playing, the way I'm doing. And, you know, as if you look back, whenever I've played regularly, I seem to do okay. So it's just a case of getting the opportunity and staying fit. And when I've done that, I've seemed to do all right.
So fit, presumably, is a big part of this, as in the fit of the club to you. Get those circumstances right, a manager that believes in you, and you're up, you're off, you're firing. What confidence starts to build the more goals you score?
I think it's just a case of players can suit certain styles, and you see it with players all the time. They'll go from one club where they're having a tough time, they go to the next club and everyone's wondering why they sold them. But I just think players fit at different clubs sometimes, and you know, if you get the right blend and balance, you can take off, and that's happened to me definitely in a few of my clubs.
So does that mean that sometimes you've gone into a club where you've thought everything was okay? Because I assume you don't sign for a club where you don't think it's going to fit your kind of attributes and mix. Does that mean that sometimes you do go in and find out it's not quite what you expected?
It could be that, or you could just be in, you know, a bit of poor form at the time, or have a couple of bad games and someone else takes your place. And you find it difficult to get back in. There's so many different reasons why things don't go to plan at a club. But like I say, you just got to keep positive, know what you're about, and just stick to it and keep going.
Does the Nomad tag sort of stick with you, James? Is that one of the things that always comes up when you have had, I think it's 13 clubs, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. I think people, you know, you get the journeyman tag and all that. But for me, it's a case of I just want to play. And it's been a case of if I'm not playing, I want to move on to somewhere where I am playing. And if I am playing, like I say, I tend to do quite well where I get interest from elsewhere, from better clubs. So that's just the way it's been for me throughout my career.
Yeah. It's that rigid in your head. You know, you don't mind playing your part, but after a certain period at a club, you'll go and see the gaffer and say, well, what's happening here? Am I getting a game or aren't I? Because if not, you're quite prepared to back yourself and ask for a move on.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm not. I've been quite open about this. I'm not the biggest fan of training. I do it because it gets me in the team on a Saturday, purely and simply. So, you know, when managers are asking me to train all week and not get the treasure at the end of the week, I don't have really any interest in doing that. I train to get in the team and play and do what I love on a Saturday. And that's why I think I end up moving on.
James Vaughan, if you think I'm going to let you get away with that one and not ask a few more questions about that, what don't you like about training?
No, it's just the way I play. I'm quite physical and, you know, if I can't, I don't want to hurt my own teammates and hurt myself. So I tend to train a different way. So I see it as kind of a pointless exercise for me. I can't really tackle and throw my weight about. I never relied on my technical ability. It's more my physical presence and, you know, the way I play. So for me, it was a case of train, get your fitness up and play on a Saturday. I don't just want to train for the sake of it. So that's why I find that, you know, if I'm not playing, I get itchy feet. I want to go on somewhere where I can.
Well, you've explained the fitness bit, but is there not a sort of a tactical message that's getting put across there as well? Is there not bits of that that come as a result of Thursday, Friday, formation, shape, they're going to do this at set pieces, etc.?
Oh, 100%. And that's why I say, you do train for those reasons, but when you're not in the tactical things on the Saturday, it's kind of like, well, I'll just be a mannequin for someone else.
Gotcha. I'm with you. Suddenly it makes sense. I thought you meant you had just stood on the sidelines like a Mardy going, oh God, run again and all that stuff.
I understand why we do it. It's just, if you're not getting the thing that you strive to do on a Saturday, it's difficult to motivate yourself throughout the week.
Yeah, and difficult, I suppose, to hone what you do well if, as you say, you can't throw your weight about and do the things that you do well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, definitely, yeah, that's a big factor.
What about managerial personalities? How much of an effect did they have on you, and how important has it been since Keith Hill came in that he's got that kind of personality, has got a couple of promotions under his belt and just seems to know what to do? Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, is everything all right with him?
No, he's good. Yeah, I think the best thing he done was we were on a really good run of form when he came in, and you know, some managers want to stamp their authority. He just kind of used his brain and saw that we were doing well and carried on with what, you know, the lads were doing before he came in, and that's a compliment to him that he recognised what we were doing and it's been successful.
Yeah, I suppose it's a hallmark of good manager too, that you don't change what doesn't need to be changed, you know. And what about seasoned pros as well? Because Clark is there, Peter Clark's there, Liam Feeney, Jay Spearing as well. There's a nice nucleus of experience there, isn't there? Proper time-served pros. I won't give them the journeyman tag that you gave yourself a little bit earlier, because I don't think that's fair.
No, there is. You mentioned some of the lads there, and you know, I've got to give a mention to Peter Clark. I think he's 39 now, and I played with him about 7 or 8 years ago at Huddersfield. And in my opinion, he's as good as he was then, if not better. And there's no stopping him. He's been our best player by a mile, if you ask me. And long may it continue.
Yeah, we've had a steady procession of Glenn Murray coming on 1 week. Cam Jerome came on a couple of weeks ago and things. There's a lot of players out there who are going on to ripe all this. Because I was starting to think that in the current era, players were going to be retiring more and more, late 20s, very early 30s. But suddenly we seem to have a whole crop that are disproving that. Do you know why that is?
Well, I can only speak, like I say, from Peter Clark. I watch him work every day and he's the model pro. He looks after himself. The shape he's in is fantastic. So, you know, players are doing that more and more these days and looking after the body. And that's why they're managing to play a lot longer.
Mm. Do you know what the prognosis is on your knee? Do you know whether you might make it back for the last few games of the season, or have you pretty much had to ride it off the rest of this campaign?
Still not really sure. It's going to depend on how the surgery goes. There's a couple of things going on in there. It's just how bad it is when he gets in.
Yeah. It was in the game against Leyton Orient when you obviously felt something at that immediate moment.
Yeah, well, I've done this quite a few times. Like I say, when I was younger, it's pretty similar to what I've done. And, you know, I'd done it and I was like, yeah, that feels pretty similar. So I had the scan and unfortunately confirmed it. So went to see the surgeon and then we're just going to take it from surgery tomorrow.
Well, listen, we wish you well with that. I'm just looking at the top of the table after the midweek fixtures. From Cheltenham in first down to Exeter in eighth, 6 points. This is going to be one hell of a back end to the season, isn't it? And you're in great form, 4 league wins out of 5, let alone going into a Wembley final.
Yeah, we are. We've got a fantastic squad and, you know, the team spirit's brilliant. And if we keep playing the way we are and the lads keep battling, I'm sure we'll be right up there at the end of the season in the mix.
James, do you ever look back on your sort of career highlights? Have you got a little montage ready to show the kids as they get a bit older? You know, before we started recording this, you said your boy was keen to watch football galore. And let's be honest, he can do that night and day at the moment. I just can't keep up with it all. But do you occasionally go and have a little look on YouTube and show the wee ones what you've done in the past?
Funny enough, a couple of weeks back, we played in the FA Cup semi-final when I was back at Everton, and he come across it on YouTube and he was showing me. So, you know, looking back on it, that was probably the best day of my career, and it takes some beating that.
Yeah, that's the semi-final against United before missing out to Chelsea in the final.
That's the one, yeah.
That's the bit that sticks. Where's your runners-up medal from that? Have you got it in a prominent place? Or
My dad's got it. I kind of dismissed it at the time, thinking, I don't want a runners-up medal and let him have it. But, you know, as you get a bit older and you realise it's something to be really proud of, I'll be getting that back off him. Especially for my little boy now, he's into all that stuff, so it won't be long until I get it off him.
What does James Vaughan at 32 think when he looks back on the 16 years, 271 days James Vaughan who scored that first Premier League goal, the youngest ever Premier League goal scorer? What does he think of him?
I think I wish I was as good as he was. Time and injuries takes its toll, but you know, it was just great experience and something, again, you asked about my best achievements. That's definitely up there with them, and it's something I'm really proud of.
Brilliant stuff. Well, listen, maybe the boys will make you proud this weekend as well, and maybe there's a bit more to come at the end of the season. So it's been fantastic to talk to you. We wish you a speedy recovery.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
And just before we go, if you can, please help the Tranmere Rovers Stadium Lift for Disabled Fans crowdfunding initiative. The aim is to raise £10,000 by the 11th of April for an installation that will benefit both disabled and less able fans to access the main stand at Prenton Park. It's part of the brilliant Level Playing Fields Weeks of Action campaign, which aims to inspire and celebrate good access and inclusion at sports venues. That's just about it for this episode. Not quite. A big thank you to James Vaughan and Mark Robbins. If you've enjoyed it, then do please give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We thought we'd finish this episode of the official EFL podcast with the team who faced Tranmere Rovers in the 2021 Papa John's Trophy final. Sunderland will be hoping for a change of fortune at Wembley Stadium since Bob Stokoe's famous team won the FA Cup in 1973. Sunderland have returned empty-handed from another FA Cup final, 2 League Cup finals, 3 playoff finals, something called the Football League Centenary Competition, and this final in 2019. We'll leave you with Charlie Wyke, Grant Ledbetter and Max Power.
When you play for Sunderland, you've got to win every game you go into, so we certainly wanted to reach the final. That was our objective at the start. Now we, like I said, we want to go on and win it now.
I think since I've rejoined the club, the last two times have been disappointing results. So I certainly don't want that to happen again. And especially at my age now, where, you know, it could be one of the last times you play at Wembley and you want to win.
Wembley is sort of like the holy grail in English football. You know, to play there is, you know, it's always a great experience. I mean, I've been twice and not won yet, so I'm hoping it's fair time. Lucky.
Full credit to the manager. I think it's one of the first few days when the manager came in, he wanted a trip to Wembley, he wanted to win this trophy, so he set his ambitions out straight away. So I think that's good as players, because you've got targets to hit.
We've had two Wembley disappointments now at this club, so it'd be nice to go and win. It'd be my fourth time here and all, so I've never won yet, so it'd be nice to get a win. It's going to be different playing with no fans, but it's just one of them. We have to win. We have to win this time. We can't go there three times to Sunderland and not win once, so we have to win. And hopefully, we get it right on the day and we do win.
Cuts off that supply line to Charlie Wyke. The cross comes in and Wyke is there. They've done it again. Aidan McGeady to Charlie Wyke. It's the route to goal for Sunderland, who are back level in this semi-final.
Sunderland fans would sell the stadium out, and Tranmere is not a small club in itself, so there'd be a big crowd there, you know, and obviously you see what it was like with Trafalgar Square and stuff like that before the game of the last two finals, so it's a shame that they can't go, but we know they'll all be watching and all waiting for us to lift that trophy.
I think I've grown up with this, the phrase, we're coming into the business end of the season, so there's always going to be big games this time of the season, but yeah, as long as you're winning games, the momentum can carry, and if you can win a trophy that you're entering, no matter what trophy you're in, if the club's in this trophy, so we set out to win it.
So it all comes down to this. Can Grant Leadbitter take his beloved Sunderland back to Wembley Stadium? If he scores, they are in the final. Leadbitter against Palmer. And Leadbitter scores! And Sunderland are going back down Wembley Way.
It's a new era. It's a new football club. Looking to go in a certain direction. And we have to start by winning at Wembley. That's what I want to do. It's what the players certainly want to do. It's what the staff want to do. And let's be honest, we want to win for the fans.
The official EFL podcast.